I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!
Speaking of talented offenses, Maryland, kind of a curious case here because they played, what, five games? So who really knows what to think of them? You know, this is a team that I had a lot of trouble finding accurate and up-to-date information about. What is clear is that Jake Funk is off to the NFL. So the guy who, one of the kind of the shining beams of light out of this last season, you know, he's a guy who's had multiple serious knee injuries. He's kind of been behind other guys. They had Javon Week and Anthony McFarland. So he was a little bit of an afterthought even when he was healthy, but then he had really a breakthrough senior season, and now he's off to try his fortunes in the pros. But the fact that I couldn't find much else tells me that they could be potentially loaded in the wide receiver core, because they returned Dante Demas, Deshaun Jones, Brian Cobbs, and Rakeem Jarrett, the guy who we clamored all offseason, like, you must find ways to get this guy the ball. Later in the season, they did. It's pretty clear to me that Taulia Tagovailoa is going to be their guy. In fact, maybe I'm making this up, but I feel like, did Lance LeJean transfer? I'm going to look this up. You go ahead and talk about defense.
Well, I look this up. I'm actually going to also talk about offense a little bit first, because the problem is, if any of those receivers just breaks out and takes over the game and becomes an obvious, you know, high round NFL draft choice, that's going to doom Maryland to being terrible, because that's a trope. That's a familiar pattern they fall into, is they're just terrible with an NFL first round receiver making all these plays that nobody's ever going to remember. We were watching the Bills in the playoffs, and my wife, who of course doesn't have the encyclopedic knowledge of NFL players' alma maters that I do, asked, I forgot, where did Diggs come from again? I said, it's from Maryland. Said, Maryland? Yeah, it was like 5 years ago. You remember when they went like 2-10? Why would I remember that?
Because they had Stephon Diggs, so you might have watched him anyway. But no, I was right. Lance LeJean did transfer. So it's Tagovailoa or nobody. They also had two starting offensive linemen transfer, Johnny Jordan and Marcus Minor.
Oof.
That's going to be a little bit of a rework there. But look, from what I can tell, our Maryland guys are still pretty confident about where this is going. And the obvious reason for that is that Loxley is still killing it on the recruiting trail. They just added a five-star linebacker to their 21 class, Terrence Lewis. That pushes them up to number 18 nationally, I think like third or fourth in the Big Ten. And in this incoming class, their eight top-ranked players are all projecting as defensive players. And that's a unit that really needs a talent infusion. So they might not necessarily be much better next year, but it's clear that they're building something. I would expect the offense to be considerably better. It'll depend on whether they can replace those offensive linemen or not. But again, they don't transfer if they're definitely going to be starting. So
it's amazing how much they're starting to remind me of Ron Zook, Illinois, overall, because, you know, because Loxley obviously learned a lot of things there. And, you know, it's even if you take away the, you know, the peak with the Rose Bowl and stuff, it's still kind of fun to go into every game knowing that you have the talent to win it. But unfortunately, you also go into every game knowing, like, even if you had way more talent, we can still lose this. But still, you know, from a 2-10, you know, doomed perspective like you had with Randy Edsall, that's pretty fun. Wax nostalgic for those days all the time. Much being like, how did we go 5-7 by losing on the road at Western Michigan at Ford Field?
With 9 NFL players on the defense.
Yeah.
It at least was interesting. That's, you know.
Yep. Absolutely entertaining, especially when you consider how much of that talent is lined up in the receiving core.
Yeah, it's I don't know what else to make of it. It's a strange program. There's nothing else to say about it. talking about another team that had kind of a year where you look at it, it's like, what even does this mean? That's Minnesota, where first game of the year, they get roughed up by Michigan. They're a disaster defensively. Over the course of the season, it becomes pretty clear that, look, this offense is sustainable, even missing a couple starting offensive linemen, even losing Ty Johnson. And, well, I guess he goes by Tyler, not Ty, but Tyler Johnson, Rodney Smith, and Shannon Brooks all gone. They don't really miss a beat in terms of their skill players. But then, you know, once Rashad Bateman opted out, the passing game really sort of caved in. It was the first year with a new offensive coordinator, but we speculated in the offseason that, look, his history at Notre Dame seems to suggest that he's going to involve the tight ends a lot more in the passing game. That didn't happen. It was still all about targeting the receivers. They got Mo Ibrahim involved in the passing game a little bit, but it was, you know, it was huge numbers for Ibrahim on the ground, huge numbers for Bateman through the air, and there wasn't a whole lot going on. Shoot, you know, the one thing I couldn't figure out is, did Mo Ibrahim declare for the draft?
Well, yeah, I mean, Minnesota was definitely a producer of some fun games because their first quarter against Michigan was very drunk. This was also before all of the hype deflated from the Michigan balloon, as is annual tradition. Yeah. But, you know, then they had that 45-44 loss to Maryland, and it became, oh, okay, so they're going to win if they score more points than the other team, but that's going to be a lot of points, Illinois notwithstanding. They ended up playing like 3-4 overtime games?
Definitely a few. Okay, so it looks like Mo Ibrahim is returning next year. So, I mean, we mentioned earlier, is Michael Penix the obvious contender for Offensive Player of the Year? Not so fast, my friend. It feels pretty safe to say that, you know, look, they had a little bit going on behind him. Trayson Potts looked pretty good in some spots, but clearly Ibrahim's going to be in line for another, you know, 30 carries a game. Pencil him in for 14 or 1,500 yards and 18 or 20 touchdowns. That's going to be huge for them next year, getting that kind of playmaker back.
Yeah, and it also remains to be seen what's going to happen with their offensive linemen that, you know, they had Faalele stay away from the program for COVID. It's hard to blame anybody of that build for doing so, really.
He's a 400-pound dude, but If the situation there isn't somewhat better by the fall, that's hard to conceive of. I mean, it's got to be better, right? By then, doesn't it? And look, honestly,
it depends on how important compromise is. What's more important, compromise or vaccinating Americans?
I'm going to leave that question unanswered, and that should tell you what I think about it. So, but look, the thing is, interestingly enough, you know, we assumed that Dunlap and Faalele were going to be huge losses, but again, on the offensive line, they're kind of okay without those guys. Later in the year, when they had a couple more drop out of the lineup, then the production started to suffer a little bit. But at that point, you're talking about missing three or four guys that were going to be your starters. So again, you know, and the concerning thing, I guess, is that Tanner Morgan was considerably less effective with this new offensive coordinator. Your hope there is that with another year of familiarity, he's able to rebound somewhat to his 2019 form. But man,
I don't know what happened to him, because there was something going on with his mechanics where, like, he just looked kind of like, in the first part of the season, like he forgot how to throw the ball. Like, it looked like he was throwing with his non-dominant hand, you know? Yeah, obviously not quite that badly, but like it didn't. I saw it compared to clips of him throwing the prior year, and it didn't look the same.
I mean, who knows? Sometimes guys will have off-season injuries that don't even get reported. I have no idea, but no, there's definitely...
It definitely wasn't a Markelle Fultz thing.
No, yeah, it wasn't that bad, but I think his season stats ended up being something like 7 passing touchdowns to 5 interceptions, and granted, a big part of that is because so much of their offensive production was on the back of Mo Ibrahim, but you obviously have to have something better than that if you want to get back to contending for the West. That being said, though, all the problems with their offense pale in comparison to the issues they had defensively. And we commented on this at length over the season that, look, this is where this year and next are really going to be where they feel the transition from the Clays regime, where you just have this gap in linebacker and defensive back recruiting that's going to cost them. Like, this is going to be painful. And given what I was able to find, it does not look like PJ Fleck is going to turn to the portal and plug those holes. He's going to rely on the guys that he has recruited, getting in, honestly, some painful snaps and repetition, and getting better.
He's a trial by fire guy. He's not. Proved that at Western Michigan.
Yeah. And look, and it worked there. And honestly, from an offensive perspective, it's worked here so far. This season could be another kind of tough go of it defensively. But the hope is that all those difficult snaps, all those blown assignments, misunderstood coverages, all that, that all those are mistakes that are correctable with experience. And we'll see, because they're going to have pretty good carryover of the guys who they had last year. So you hope that you get better playmaking and better discipline overall. Now we finally get to talk, you know, even though we're getting down here in terms of actual quality, we finally get to talk about an unqualified good news story, an unvarnished success, something for even grasping cynics like us to point to as a positive out of this just horribly contrived season that probably never should have happened. That's Rutgers football. Consider that I don't think anyone would disagree with us for saying that this was a massive success for a year, in a year where this team went 3-6.
Yeah. One thing I'm pretty sure of right now is that Greg Schiano needs to send Clay Travis an edible arrangement, because were it not for his righteous outrage over totally not performance related things, like things that were totally unrelated to what he did in Tampa Bay and was all about, you know, being a man of integrity. Whoa, did you just get a ding?
Did I just get a ding?
Oh, that was on my computer. But anyway, oh man, gonna have to edit that. But anyway, this very principled stand ended up working out in both their favors, because Greg Schiano didn't have to go to Tennessee and instead managed to get into this position at Rutgers, which even if he struggles both places, it's still better for him to be at Rutgers, because like, how long would he have to be? How bad? How bad would he be have to be for how long for them to fire him? Like, I want to say you've got about 6-7 years, no questions asked.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. Well, if he wins one or two games a year, no, they'll fire him before that. But it's certainly fair to say he's not going to feel any pressure for two or three, which in modern college football is an eternity.
And considering that the persistent rumors that we heard were that the final negotiations were essentially Schiano convincing them that, no, in order for this to succeed, I need to like run this football program to a greater extent than you guys might be used to.
Yeah. So, and look, who's been right about that so far? But you know, it's
absolutely
funny.
Whereas it's also worked out in Tennessee's favor, because they get to have a new coach again.
Yeah. So, and it was funny that you brought that up, because say that he had been the coach at Tennessee, like, what do you think the odds are he would still be the coach there right now? Pretty slim, right?
Like, I don't know. It's really hard to say.
Because what did Pruitt make it there? Was it 2 years or three?
Three.
Yeah. What do you think the odds are that he wouldn't have gotten fired there by now? Because, look, the pressure at Tennessee is apparently high enough that the coach was just giving McDonald's bags full of money to recruits. Like, he wasn't even trying to hide how much he was cheating. The school, I mean, even in the environment of the SEC, Tennessee could be facing pretty serious NCAA infractions because of the pressure the coach felt to win and win immediately. It's also worth noting that Phil Fulmer, paragon of integrity, is going to be stepping down as soon as he makes the new hire, you understand. So consider that that's the environment that he could have been in, whereas now he's at a place that reveres him unconditionally, where he's had huge success before, and where, again, even a 3-6 season has fans foaming at the mouth to get back into the stadium to see where he takes this program next.
It's also, as 3-6 seasons go, pretty good. Really only one colossal beatdown. I mean, the game against Indiana was never really like that close, but it was always a couple of scores.
Disagree, friend. That's the game with the multilateral touchdown that was unjustly called back.
Yeah, but that would have cut it to a two-score game.
No, if they'd gotten the 2-point, it would have made it a one-score game, I believe.
Okay. Still, though.
Granted, yes, I understand it was a very long shot, but it could have been great drama. So
we're talking about 7 out of 8 games that – or no, 8 out of 9 games that had definite intrigue. Like,
yeah, for sure.
That's what we're talking about. That's very good for a 3-6 season. That's about the best kind of 3-6 season you can hope for.
Yeah, and so then off the field, obviously the path to greater success for Rutgers has always been, can you keep more of your talent at home? Well, let's take a look at the recruiting. So his 2021 class is 41st nationally, which is 10th in the conference. On paper, that doesn't sound very good until you consider that the last three classes They were 61st, 65th, and 56th. Either 14th or 13th in the league all 3 years.
You're getting replacement level Big Ten starters.
Yeah, and the other important thing is in this year's class, he's got 2 4-star prospects out of New Jersey, and 9 out of, I think, 21 players are from the state. That's certainly progress. I mean, he's not going to come in and build a Berlin Wall fence overnight around New Jersey, but breaking in with these kinds of guys this quickly is a really good sign.
You know, there's a lot of strategies that coaches use to build programs, because you had like Jeff Brohm bridge the gap with transfers. You had PJ Fleck just start over, out with the old, in with the new, trial by fire. And several of these strategies actually can succeed. It depends on who's doing it and how good they are at executing it, because you've seen coaches fail at both of those scenarios. You've seen coaches not stick to their plan, and that's ended up failing.
Yeah.
So Schiano, took the approach that you'd reasonably expect a guy in his position to take, but also did a very good job of it, because if you look at the transfers that he got, they were all very productive for this team.
Big impacts across the board. Malik Barrow was important. Michael Dwumfor was important enough that he's now off to the league. Noah Vedral became their starting quarterback. Aaron Cook.
It might have been advantageous for Michael Dwumfor. It was probably advantageous for him to go to Rutgers. Think about that.
Yeah. How many guys can you say that about in the last, decade? I mean, think how recently it was where their anticipated team captain transfers to Ohio State, becomes a starting offensive lineman, and then becomes a mid-round draft pick. I mean, that was
And then after what, 56 to nothing, his former teammates are all there like congratulating him for making it out the ghetto.
Pretty much. So in terms of retention, they're in a pretty good situation as well. Their two big impact linebackers, Tyshawn Fogg and Olakunle Fadukase, are both staying. Bo Melton, who emerged as a bona fide number one receiver, is staying. They're once again working the transfer portal. Patrice Rene from North Carolina is going to be the headliner there. They got a couple guys from Temple. So they're plainly going to continue to work the portal, but their recruiting class has improved to a point where it seems like that's going to be less of an emphasis, because there's fewer guys in terms of numbers that they're getting out of the portal. And that's the next step. Who knows if that necessarily means they're going to be much better on the field next year. I think that's debatable. But again, nothing but green arrows pointing up here. You like the direction this is going. Little more of a mixed bag for the next team, and that's Purdue.
What did we talk about every time with Purdue? The defense and how bad it is.
Why are you hiring this guy? Why are you hiring Bob Diaco? What in his recent resume, like since he left Notre Dame, after winning the Broyles Award, he has absolutely turned into a pumpkin. Like he whatever other metaphor you care to use, he's been a complete disaster. Fired from, I think, 3 jobs in the last 4 years or something like that. And
red flags in addition to the performance, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
non-performance related red flags.
Yeah. And then he goes to Nebraska and he's blaming the players for being too dumb to grasp his galaxy.
That's the kind of thing that you see that in a press conference and you think, wow, this guy's not going to have a coordinator job for a while. This guy's going to be like, an analyst for one of his old buddies for a few, then be a position coach, and then maybe get. But no, he was immediately hired as a defensive coordinator. And
yeah,
I mean, I guess you got to give credit to Jeff Brohm for being a shrewd investor, because when you acquire, you put this much into liquid assets, you have to set a trailing stop loss, which he very much did. And that stop loss hit immediately.
Man, I've been a fan of Jeff Brohm because his offenses are throwing the watch.
He molds the clay of walk-ons into fun to watch quarterbacks.
Yeah, but I can't defend his hiring decision here. Like this, if he didn't nail his replacement decision here, this could end up being the mistake that finishes his program at Purdue. I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily on the hot seat. I think it seems that Purdue fans are still reasonably optimistic. They were furious about the defense last year, as they should have been. But he gathered enough talent here that they should be more competitive. So they've got plenty of guys that have more experience, Marvin Grant, George Karlaftis. They need Brad Lambert to put those guys in a scheme that works right away, though. They're not going to be in a position where they can be terrible on defense again and say, well, look, it's a new scheme. We got to get used to it. No, you have to make this work right away. The clock is ticking. It's ticking loudly. And as much fun as Brohm's offenses are to watch, he still ain't done much. I mean, he's got the win over Ohio State, and that's kind of it. Like, is that really what you're getting? You know, what are you going to sell to recruits if you don't start winning more? I mean, on offense, you're probably fine. You can convince all the receivers and quarterbacks in the world that they're better off coming to you, but that's not going to be enough to elevate this program. You got to, this defensive coordinator hire has to be a success, and it has to be a success right away.
You shouldn't be aiming for at least it's better than the Hazel era. You know, it's not necessarily realistic to fire everyone who's not definitely going to get you to the title game more years than not, but you got to at some point say, all right, at what point do you need to establish our floor somewhere high, you know, somewhere around 500?
Yeah, when you're not, you know, getting boat raced by Nebraska towards the end of the season, getting roughed up by Rutgers, like that happened this year. So
again, that was a Rutgers team that was very much on offense, just throwing shit against the wall and seeing what stuck. I mean, credit to them for doing that, but like they didn't really have a, I mean, their game plan was just kind of, all right, who do we have that's healthy and what's our opponent? And okay, what are we going to do?
Yeah. I mean, if your opponent's doing that and everything sticks to you at the end of the year, that's a problem. Again, the flip side of this is that offensively, they've got plenty of thrilling guys to watch, even though like it's such a strange career that Rondale Moore ended up having there. Cause what did they get out of him altogether? Like 15 or 16 games of him being truly healthy. And now he's off to the league. I don't know what his draft stock looks like, because you talk about a guy who's going to have injury red flags. I mean, he's absolute dynamite when he's out there, but he's hardly ever out there. So,
I mean, poor man's Percy Harvin.
Ooh, geez. Yeah, I guess. And if that's the comparison, like what kind of asset are teams going to be willing to invest to get him? I don't know. I'm sure.
Because Percy Harvin had a lot of injury problems in the NFL, but in the games that he was on the field, he was very difficult to contain.
Yeah. And I think it's also fair to say that, again, based on, you know, before he even stepped on the field, the first thing that made him famous was how much he could squat, wasn't it? Or deadlift or what?
You're thinking of Saquon Barkley.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking of Moore. I do recall Saquon had crazy weight room numbers as well, but I think Rondale Moore was right there, like breaking program strength records as a tiny wide receiver, like a freshman wide receiver. I could be wrong, but anyway, I think my point is, I think he's a guy who's going to test really well at the combine if he's healthy. Although the combine now is basically just at your pro day. Did you hear about that?
I didn't.
Yeah. They're not really holding an in-person combine this year. They're just going to do what sounds like an expanded digital thing through your school's pro day. So there's not going to be a combine as we know it.
I wonder if the 40 time record will be broken.
Feels like there's going to be a lot of 4.1s run this year. But the flip side of the coin that I wanted to bring up with Moore, of course, is although you're sad as a Purdue fan to see him go, you get to watch David Bell as a true number one receiver for another year, and that's going to be a lot of fun. You also saw Xander Horvath put a lot of doubts to rest about his ability to be in every down back. It still really feels like they need a more explosive big play guy out of the backfield to pair with him. They have some options there, but nobody who they really used very much last year. And then from a quarterback perspective, Aiden O'Connell was fine. Then he got injured. Then Jack Plummer was fine. I guess you go back to a competition this offseason, or maybe you say, look, O'Connell won the job and deserved it. So,
anyway. You know, and it's just what Brohm does with the receivers and the quarterbacks that makes me want him so much more than his record really at this point justifies. Because you look at, it's not just the quarterbacks. It's also just, you look at the, you know, Rondale Moore, David Bell with those receivers, they have like a rapport, like they've been playing together for like 8 years.
Yeah, it's with a pretty constant rotating door, because again, they've had pretty rough injury luck at those positions. They've had a couple guys transfer in and out of the receiver spots, but yeah, those spots, things really do click, and there hasn't been much of a problem there. Which again, is probably why I give a little bit more credit to Brohm than he's necessarily earned so far, because at least his teams are fun to watch.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Now, in terms of teams that were not fun to watch, the Michigan Wolverines. So recently, after this kind of long, weird, out-of-the-public-eye stare-down, the athletic department extended Jim Harbaugh's contract, I believe for 5 more years, or it might
be... Yes, 5 years.
I forget, yeah. Well, so he had 1 year left on the deal. What I don't recall is whether they gave him 5 more or 5 total. Either way, he's here for the... you know, intermediate term, but they cut his salary and they cut his buyout. And so what that tells me is the school would actually like to keep their options open, which a year or two ago would have been unthinkable that they would ever want to move on from him, let alone that they would take concrete contractual steps to be able to do it if he underwhelms again. So their big offseason story is going to be the firing of Don Brown, which his overall tenure, you could look at and say, well, that's kind of harsh, but his best defenses were the first couple years he was there. They continue to get blown out in big games, especially by Ohio State. And that's not a way to keep your job at Michigan. Look, this job is always going to be defined by your relationship to Ohio State. Just like once upon a time, Ohio State's was defined relative to Michigan. They've kind of moved past that. But if they start losing to Michigan again, that's going to be bad for Ryan Day, whoever is coaching the Buckeyes. This game still matters. So they fire Don Brown, you know, a guy who was great at Boston College, good the first couple of years at Michigan, trailed off a little bit. Who do they hire to replace this consummate veteran and professional? Mike McDonald, a 33-year-old NFL position coach, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens, where Jim Harbaugh's brother is the coach, a guy who has never called plays. So if this is my team that's making that kind of hire at this stage in a coach's tenure, my reaction is basically that of Jake Peralta from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
So you had the athletic director grasping at straws as far as what the hell to do here. And then that attitude transferred down to Jim Harbaugh, who went grasping at straws for what to do at defensive coordinator. He said, well, screw it. Maybe we can find, a young guy who's young and he's young and he's up and coming and he's young and he's going to infuse this great team with a great youthful energy. And he's a young, great young coaching mind who's very young. And you look at the NFL playoffs and there's all these coaches that are young and they're also young. And, you know, it's a pure upside play.
Yeah, this is absolutely a trust fall of a hire. And it's fair to say, I mean, the comparison that I've heard, and I cannot for the life of me remember where I heard this comparison, had to be somewhere in local media here, is that what they're basically trying to do here is find a guy like Ryan Day or Jeff Hafley, who were both hired kind of out of obscurity at pretty young position, you know, based on a feel that this guy has an understanding of the game that's going to translate and just needs his opportunity. It's a route that can work. But for every hire that gives you a Ryan Day, there's probably 25 or 30 that are absolute flameouts. So
not to mention, you get a Ryan Day, well, then he'll maybe take you to a slightly higher level, which means, hey, maybe you go 500 against a rebuilding Michigan State.
Look, if they get a guy of the quality of Ryan Day, it's going to help. Like, it's going to make them a lot better if they get a coach of that caliber. And it's true that he inherits a couple of All-American caliber pieces. Aiden Hutchinson is going to return, although he's coming off a broken leg. And they get Daxton Hill, who's 1 year short of being draft eligible. So those two spots are looking real good. Other than that, you know, Brad Hawkins announced he's returning. So you've got both your safeties taken care of, I guess. Your corners were bad. You know, Cam McGrone was your only decent linebacker. He's gone. Quiddie Pay left, so you need another defensive end. Your defensive tackles have been getting pushed around for years now. There's a lot of problems to fix on this defense. They're in a little bit better position offensively. Jalen Mayfield declared for the draft. They barely had him last year anyway, but that means their offensive line is still really young. Yeah, I like what they have in the running back group. Even with Zach Charbonnet transferring, you know, the guy who got all the hype last year, even though Hassan Haskins was the better player, because now they don't have an excuse to not give Haskins 20 carries a game. That should be a net positive for them. Now they don't have an excuse not to get Blake Corum on the field more. You know, sometimes less is more. It felt like they had too many running backs last year and they didn't know how to balance them out.
Yeah, absolutely. I just don't know why this offense is so fundamentally broken when you consider that they have more talented skill players than, I don't know, like 10 teams in the conference. And with nothing but that, you know, there's coaches in the conference that could build a top three offense.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, look, when I watched them last year, there were two guys that absolutely jump off the screen to me, and that's Corum and Giles Jackson. You find ways to get those guys the ball in space, which this offense is supposed to be. It's supposed to be speed and space. They should be in business, but they didn't do that a whole lot last year. They continued to run between the tackles. They continued to throw to the tight ends all the time. I mean, look, I get that. I did not believe last year that Josh Gattis had complete control of this offense, because if he did, I think guys like that would have gotten the ball a lot more, but they just didn't do it as much as they probably should have. You know, that being said, these options they're going to have next year could be incredible. I mean, again, Haskins and Corum are a fantastic combo of running backs. They're still going to have Giles Jackson. They're still going to have A.J. Henning, who they barely used. And they're bringing in Xavier Worthy, a receiver from California, who picked them over Alabama, which makes me think he might be kind of dumb, because he's going to Michigan, a team that turned Donovan Peoples-Jones, a top 10 national recruit, into a sixth-round pick over Alabama, which is about to put four wide receivers into the first round of the draft in 2 years. That's the choice he made. So I hope he takes the fullest advantage of the education he can get at Michigan. That's about all I'll say about that. And of course, none of this matters if they don't sort out their quarterback situation. Because remember, it was not even 6 months ago that we were hearing about Joe Milton being the hybrid of, you know, Cam Newton and John Elway or whatever. I mean, the situation that ended up happening with him feels irretrievable, but he hasn't left yet. You know, Cade McNamara was good when he played.
Also, that was one season. Like, yeah. That feels like it took so much longer.
In the course of 1 year, not even a whole year, he went from
the next guy to, oh, this is the guy that's coming, to this guy is going to take us there, to fuck this guy.
To him being so bad that they played an injured Cade McNamara over him. So, I don't know. I have to assume McNamara is the starter heading into spring practice. Maybe J.J. McCarthy, the next Uber recruit, September Heisman, ends up getting some hype. But
Nope. J.J. McCarthy is going to get the hype, but he's not going to play, because if he plays, then how can Harbaugh say that, you know, then the hype is not going to be about the next Jim Harbaugh quarterback that's going to finally be the one. He's got to always have that guy in the bullpen so that there's always something to come back for next year.
That's true. And I mean, in a more realistic angle, Harbaugh has never shown any inclination to play a freshman quarterback either. So that's, yeah. I wouldn't expect that. If it's not McNamara, then it means there's been a rehabilitation of Milton's relationship with his staff that at this point feels unrealistic. So now we're going to pivot a little bit to the section that I didn't bother doing much outline for, because I feel like you can carry this one on your own. Illinois, take it away.
Well, I outlined in the first podcast after we hired Brett Bielema, several ways that this could go. And so far, in tracking what's been going on, it's actually been leaning towards the more optimistic scenario that I pointed out. He slowly but surely filled out the coaching staff, in all of the hires made sense. They were all guys that had a lot of experience in college football, in specific specific recruiting areas, that had recruiting bona fides, and also, you know, experience with good programs under good coaches. You know, for a pretty varied level of experience. I mean, you know, the one that's going to get poo-pooed is Andy Buh, who's going to be the linebackers coach. He was at Maryland, but we're not giving him a tremendous amount of responsibility over the defense. We hired away Missouri's defensive coordinator, which is really a stunning thing, for considering that, you know, in the olden days, we wouldn't pay up $20,000 raises for coaches that were wanted by other teams. You know, talking about the Ron Gunther days, but stunning that we were willing to pony up the cash to take away Missouri's defensive coordinator. Now, of course, you know, Eli Drinkwitz is not really even going to miss him. I mean, he's not mad. He just thinks it's funny that anyway, I digress. A couple of things that are just mind blowing to me, having conditioned myself to accept Lovie Smith. One, he apparently Bielema himself was talking with some of the guys on the defensive line that had decided to either go pro or to the transfer portal for like up to an hour a day by himself, and got Owen Carney and Roderick Perry, by far the two most effective defensive linemen, to return for next year. I didn't even know that the coach was allowed to do that. I'd forgotten about that.
I mean, it's
you mean to tell me he actually talked to the players on his team in person, face to face? That's an enormous boost, because I mean, and I'm not talking about like, oh, maybe we can be a title contender. I'm talking about the difference between like a 2-10 nuclear winter apocalypse season, like we have to deal with every 5 years or so, and like, you know, maybe 4-8, you know, beat a conference team, maybe, you know, maybe hang in there with some guys. And I really think that Owen Carney and Roderick Perry do provide, as our two best defensive linemen, do provide some reason to hope that that'll happen. What else was encouraging? We're talking about just want to see a guy that does the obvious things. He retained Corey Patterson, the one coach that I said, we've got to keep this guy. This is the former Trinity Catholic High School head coach, you know, in the St. Louis area. And this was the guy that he, you know, day one, he made it clear that he was going to retain Corey Patterson. And Corey Patterson was also instrumental in, you know, they've been starting to get guys back who were going to, especially guys who were going to transfer, which again was just something that just seems unthinkable coming directly from Lovie Smith to that. So far in the early days, the returns are fairly promising. Offers went out. There was actually a linebacker whose name escapes me that we offered, and then he committed like 2 days later, which again, you shitting me? Like, he actually committed like just a couple days after we offered him? What the hell is, what is this sorcery? Witchcraft?
As it turns out, you're allowed to recruit players in January. Like, you don't have to wait until July or August to finish recruiting players for that season, which is, you know, a revelation, I'm sure, to many of your fellow Illini fans.
Yeah, and again, for all the misgivings I've had with Bielema, you know, the one thing I did acknowledge was that there is definitely, if he's focused, especially in these early days, they're so important when you talk about setting up a staff and establishing you know, your recruiting ties and all that, and setting up the first season. So, you know, you see what Schiano's done at Rutgers. You know, didn't set the world on fire, but also kind of set the world on fire when you talk about how people are talking about the program now. and that's something that, again, I mean, just being the ever cautious Illini fan, you got to think that at some point Bielema crashes and burns. But he's a guy that until then, for now, has seemed to do all the obvious things that you say, like, well, every other, you know, every competent, experienced college football coach would do this thing. Bielema is doing those things. He also, you did mention transfer players. He got a running back of his from Arkansas to transfer over. I can't recall the name off the top of my head. I don't know that we were necessarily hurting at running back, given the emergence of Chase Brown, but let me just see if I can find this guy's name.
We really look at this is the same thing for my team, which is when you're in a certain position with your talent level, you're never really set, right? Like you're always looking to add better players. Even if you kind of think you've got your current starter, you're one injury away from then looking down the depth chart and wondering if you have a solution. So no, the fact that you've got a capable starter doesn't mean that you shouldn't be out pursuing higher quality players even at that position.
There we go. Chase Hayden. There's a guy.
Chase and Chase, huh?
Yeah, Chase. Yeah, yeah. So two Chases back there. so had a couple of. I mean, interesting that we see Brett Bielema adding running backs in the early going here. you know, they weren't very committal on what kind of an offense they would run. But I think, you know, Brett Bielema understands that you really, you know, it doesn't really matter what style of running game you use as long as you can control the game by running the ball. It doesn't have to be lining up in the I formation. It can be the spread option shit. It can be whatever, as long as you can run the ball consistently. And so you have to establish some system that can do that. All in all, I mean, I'm definitely more optimistic than I would have been had they not fired Lovie Smith, like by leaps and bounds.
Low bar is low, but yeah, agreed.
And, you know, you could definitely, yeah. I mean, I'm understanding why they made this hire. Do I wish they would have made a different one? Yes, but the floor on this one seems to be, the projected floor on this one seems to be rising every single time Brett Bielema does something.
Hey, look, that's about as much as you can ask for with a new hire from a position that Illinois was in. So we've been discussing each of these teams in terms of players that have come and gone. If I were to do that in complete detail for Michigan State, it would be another hour or so just by itself. I expressed at various times that this roster was pretty clearly going to undergo a serious overhaul. And so it has. It's probably been something like 15 or so players that have transferred out. Now, in normal circumstances, that would sound like a disastrous number. And it could be like that. There's a chance that could end up being a real problem in a year or two. But honestly, of the players that transferred out, you could make a case that Rocky Lombardi was the only guy who contributed much. You know, a lot of the others were guys who barely played this year, even with it being kind of a throwaway season. Rocky Lombardi is potentially the only guy who transferred out that had a real chance to play based on what we'd seen this year. Probably the biggest roster turnover in the league, though. Now, the good news is that, you know, even for – there were certainly guys that were disappointing to see go. For example, Devontae Dobbs and Julian Barnett, the two blue chips out of the 2019 class. Like, now that's just a bunch of three stars. So you got to hope that the guys who stay kind of outplay their position. But they've also clearly indicated that they're going to be active in replacing those guys. So in addition to the recruiting class – they've got transfers coming in who figure pretty much to a man to be impact players right away. So they lose, for example, Anthony Williams as a running back who transfers out, but they bring in two guys, although it's not really clear if both of them are actually coming because a bunch of these transfers have enrolled. Kenneth Walker III out of Wake Forest is probably going to be your premier running back next year. They were supposed to get Harold Joyner from Auburn, but it seems like he didn't come. It is also worth noting that Joyner committed before they got Kenneth Walker III, so maybe he didn't love that idea and backed off on his commitment. They pick up a transfer quarterback from Temple and Anthony Russo, a guy who was a multi-year starter. And, you know, with Lombardi gone, now they have at least some experienced competition for Peyton Thorne and their other guys. I wonder, can you hear the howling of my Husky correspondent in the background?
I absolutely can.
He is just going to town, and this happens really only when ambulances go by. There must have been a pretty serious car accident or something, because I live close to a hospital, as you know. And okay, we've now shushed him because it's late enough at night at this point that we kind of want to put a lid on that. So so you got the offensive skill players, the guys that are going to get the most attention. The one who figures to be perhaps the biggest impact would be Drew Jordan, a defensive end from Duke. And given the state of Michigan State's pass rush last year, he is going to be needed. They also bring in Jarrett Horst, an offensive tackle from
Horst,
who was, I think, like second team all Sun Belt or something like that. You know, again, given the state of Michigan State's offensive line, I'm kind of disappointed they only added one transfer guy on that in that position group, because they've been bad. They got worse last year. That's the spot where they need improvement right away.
It's interesting that Anthony Russo transferred from Temple, because that was a name that I was familiar with. That was an established veteran starter. And I also recall that Temple's running back, who was a feature guy, and was lined up for a ton of carries, also transferred. And I'm wondering what the hell's going on there.
I don't know. So Matt Rule's been gone from there for a few years now. I don't remember if they changed coaches again or what, but yeah, they lost a ton of guys. And, you know, Rutgers had a couple players transfer from there as well. Penn State got a guy who transferred away from there. So I don't remember if they made a coaching change or what. Yeah. So the thing with Russo is this last year he had a shoulder injury, so he only played in a few games last season.
Yo, Andrew, I appear to have lost you. Hello? Well, apparently Andrew was banished to the Shadow Realm. So this is my opportunity to get back with some things that I neglected to mention. One is that Senior Captain Blake Hayes of Illinois announced very dramatically that he would not, in fact, be entering the NFL draft, but would return despite the promise of riches and glory in the league. He would return to helm the Fighting Illini in 2021. I guess he's anticipating a lot of punting reps again. Not necessarily a bad hedge. And also, yeah, I mean, we're more or less wrapping up Michigan State here. Antoine Simmons, Naquan Jones, and Shakur Brown, the best defensive players on the team, are all off to the league. Antoine Simmons appears to be on the NFL's radar, which is a pretty good, you know, result for him considering where he started the year in relation to people's radars. And we're going to conclude, once Andrew returns from the Shadow Realm, with Nebraska. Of course, we're going to conclude with Nebraska because they got boat raced by Illinois, and that's just what's going to happen. And at the end of the day, Lovie Smith, well...
Lovie Smith was mediocre. Lovie Smith was mediocre. Lovie Smith was mediocre.
We're Illinois football.
That's what happens.
It's a line I had their ups and downs.
Four hang class and play case
books. Patrick Gerald always made them look like clowns.
5 years, he couldn't beat them. What?
Everybody win a championship, but never thought we'd get beat 63-0.
Lovie Smith was mediocre. Lovie Smith was mediocre.
Had a couple moments in the sun. Beating Rutgers four times doesn't count as one.
Beat Wisconsin, that was kind of weird.
Lovie should be under arrest. Going 4-26 in the Big Ten West.
Lovie Smith was mediocre. Lovie Smith was mediocre. Lovie Smith was mediocre.
We're Illinois football.
That's what happens.
So anyway, enough about Lovie Smith and Dragon Balls and Shadow Realms. Nebraska. So as far as attrition is concerned, they had a bunch of guys, including defensive end Ben Still, safety Marco Dismuke, JoJo Doman, Will Honus, and Deontay Williams are all using the extra year, and they're going to be back to a defense that was actually better than you think. Better than we want to give them credit for, you know, better than it's popularly perceived that they are, because, you know, Nebraska, all the hype is on the offense, but the defense was good enough to keep them in games this year. But a big problem on the other side of the ball is Wandale Robinson is leaving, which is really kind of a big red flag. Andrew and I had mentioned over the course of this last season, like, I don't understand why they're not giving Wandale the ball, especially, you know, handing it off to him more. He was not getting that many touches. I think he came in expecting more. I'm not really sure what the details are for this, but, you know, the other decent playmaker that they really had on that offense was Dedrick Mills, who was also gone. And also they lose the offensive tackle, Matt Farniok. So there's a lot more questions than answers on the offensive side of the ball, because it's not so much what losing Wandale means for the team on the bottom line. It's what it says about the handle that Scott Frost has on this program and the talent that he's brought there, because I really don't know. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see if anything comes out as to why there was this disagreement or whatever it was that led to his departure. But in the meantime, they'll have to soldier on without those two playmaking backs. And the question is how they're going to do that, because they seem to have settled on Adrian Martinez, but, you know, he hasn't really played through an entire season yet without injury because they put him in bad situations. He puts himself in bad situations a lot where he's taking hits. It's kind of part of a design of this offense that he takes hits and is under pressure a lot. And that's led to turnovers. And, you know, he's not a freshman anymore. Like, this is a point where he, if not for the extra year of eligibility, I believe he'd be going into his senior year. So as there's only so much more room that he has to develop. That's not saying that he hasn't got any more room to develop. It's just that you'd think that he would have come farther by now if he had that much further to go. So it'll be interesting to see how Scott Frost regroups this program after what was, to be honest, a very disappointing year. I mean, you know, I'm sure the initial happiness about getting to play and, you know, their good buddy Ryan Day blowing them out, as is a very courteous thing to do, faded as they got, again, boat raced by Illinois and once again came up with a losing record. So that's really what remains to be seen. How long does Frost have to put it together? That's what we don't really know. He's the, you know, he's the Jim Harbaugh savior come home to the pro, to the struggling program, but he's done even less because Jim Harbaugh did have an impact right away that bought him some time that he maybe didn't need, but it was a very strong statement what he did with his 2015 and 2016 seasons and getting Michigan to the top 10 and proving they could dominate lesser competition and proving that they were, you know, they were solid, well-coached teams, things that really proved out to not be that true in the long run. But at the time, that's what they were. Scott Frost hasn't even really had that much of an impact. So at this point, Scott Frost needs to figure out what's going on with this offense before he runs out of rope. So sorry, we don't have anything better to say about Nebraska, but hey, at the end of the day, isn't getting to play football in a pandemic its own reward?
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!